Okay, major new development.
Wait, what?
I got through an entire stream earlier today with no buzzing, no popping, no clicks, no dropping, no desyncs, no nothing. 2 straight hours of clean audio and video.
Ooh.
I think there is hope for us all.
I can't help but notice you're streaming. I'm talking to you from the laptop today.
That was the next thing I was going to be clear. This was on the PC. This was on my new PC.
Uh-huh.
2 hours of streaming with no problems. On the PC, does that mean I'm confident enough to record this podcast on this PC?
No,
not quite.
Well, so
not yet. I thought about it. I was like, do I really want to tempt fate? You're leaving for somewhere tomorrow. We're not exactly going to be able to re-record this podcast if it goes south. Maybe I should stick to the proven machine, which is this MacBook.
So the fun thing is, as it's gotten warmer here in the Bay Area, my machine's gotten a little bit wonky.
Huh. And you don't say.
It's possible that the Nuclear Fast DDR5 maybe was getting a little warmer than it likes. So I put a little fan on it.
So as my PC problems decrease, you were just taking them on.
Yeah, I will tell you, I updated the BIOS the other day, and as a result of that, I had to turn off PCI Express link state management in the Windows power control panels because that was making bad things happen, I think. And I haven't had any bad things happen since I turned that off. So, and I've gotten really good at troubleshooting WHEA logging issues.
Oh, you don't want those.
No, they're bad. Bad thing. I had one 2 hours ago.
Can you just drop the speed of your memory a little bit?
I mean, why would I, I cannot, Brad. I mean, yes, I could, but no, am I going to? The answer is no. I dropped my memory to JEDEC last night just to see what would happen. And when I fired up Fortnite, I was only getting 180 frames a second. It was horrible.
Well, thanks for joining us. This has been the shortest tech pod ever. See you next week.
Look, I saved the Audacity file beforehand, so if I blue screen or something, I'll still have whatever we've recorded up to the point that I crap out.
Oh, I see. Now the tables have turned. Now you're recording on an unstable machine.
Yeah, it's probably fine. I haven't had any problems yet today.
Never update your BIOS, I'm going to say. I mean, I'm still in the land of computers that burn themselves to death with the wrong BIOS, so I have to. But I flashed the newest beta BIOS the other day.
Yeah.
And I think we both do this. I think this is a good litmus test for how well you've set up your Windows install. If you open Device Manager and you don't have any flags on any devices in terms of a driver is missing for this thing or it failed to start or whatever, you've done well, right?
I'm going to go ahead and tell you the number of times in the last 20 years that I've had little yellow exclamation points on stuff in Device Manager that were unsolved by the time I went to sleep that night is probably like 2.
Wow, no kidding.
My shit is always locked in.
That's what I like to hear. Well, I was
5x5, Brad.
Yes, I was in the same place with this machine until I flashed that new beta BIOS. And now under Universal Serial Bus Controllers, all of a sudden I have this ITE USB connector client device.
Oh, yeah.
With a little yellow exclamation mark.
Yeah, what does that thing do?
This device cannot start. Code 10, status device power failure.
Well, you got a code 10 situation there, it sounds like.
That wasn't there before I flashed that new BIOS. What's going on?
You probably need to align your Jeffries tubes and get the Cochrane coils fired up and everything will work itself out.
Oh, hey, I got this Pine-Sol in, so maybe it's time to crack open this case and get to work.
Oh, that's a bad idea. Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad.
How you doing, Brad?
I'm Brad. I don't know if you knew that.
I'm Brad all day. Is this your new?
Yes. Denny Crane.
I had to go pick up my daughter from school, and I rode my bike to pick her up today. And she rode. I am slowly, after 10 years of living someplace that I can ride my bike pretty much everywhere in town, I'm almost comfortable riding a bike on busy streets now.
Whoa.
And it's terrifying.
That is progress. Helmeted, I assume?
Of course.
Please. Okay.
Yeah, no, I got to keep that's the moneymaker up there.
Are you all sticky now?
I'm going to go and tell you, I could use a shower.
Covered
and it's pretty
grime.
Warm in this office.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hot down there.
Not off and on. It's been pretty nice. It's like, you know, May in Pacifica, it's foggy and cool.
Okay. I was going to ask I feel like the fog started early this year. I'm very unhappy about it.
It's like, so I love the fog. It's like good. It's like good fog though. Cause it's like, it's just like you have like light air conditioning everywhere you go. It's not not like 50, it's like 62, which is good fog.
I think I get like low key seasonal affective disorder at this time of year. Cause I mean, I don't know how much fog you guys are getting, but it's like 24/7 around here. Like no sunshine for days on end.
Oh no. See, this is okay. Look, I'm just going to tell you this because it's just you and me and nobody else is listening. Mm-hmm. Pacifica, we get fog at the end of the day, but in the morning and afternoon, sunny.
Oh, no.
So you come down here and like I take the dog out in the morning. I sit out, have some coffee, throw the Frisbee. I eat some oatmeal, drink some coffee.
Sounds like a nice start to the day.
And like my whole body is just bathed in sun.
Nope.
And then when it just about the time you'd be like, man, I wish I had air conditioning. It's getting hot as shit in here. You crack open a window and it's 62 degrees outside. It's perfect.
That sounds pretty good. You know, I do like a nice sunset, but I would take that.
Yeah. Just don't tell anybody because we don't want more people here. We're full. Go home.
I would take that over this, which is getting up every morning, throwing the curtains open and being disappointed.
Yeah. Well,
and that disappointment just continues for until about
August?
Let's say early October, late September.
Really? It's that bad? Dude, it wasn't that man. Okay. So where you live,
it actually might be a climate change thing. I don't remember it being this bad here when I moved in this area like 15 years ago.
So I used to live on the other side, further south from you. And it was not as bad down there when I lived at like, cause I used to live at like Inner Sunset and on the other side further south. And, it was not as bad.
It very well could be a climate change development actually. Anyway.
Yeah. Hi.
We're here to bring some sunshine to the tech podcast world.
Yeah, we're turning Q's into A's. We're answering emails. This is the email episode. If you have a question, you can send it to podcast@techpod.com. Nope, that's not it. If you have a question, you can send it to techpod@content.town.
Now I want to go see how much techpod.com would cost.
It was really expensive.
We already have control of the superior domain content.town. But
yeah, content.town. Come on down to content town. We got all the content that you need in the content town.
Maybe we should register techpod.zip.
Nope. I'm not registering any .zips. Fuck Google for starting that bullshit.
How about techpod.mov?
Now I'm in for that.
Okay.
That's where the video podcast lives. Forever empty. If you don't know, if you have a pie hole, maybe just block the .zip TLD at the DNS level to avoid disaster. Cause, everybody, you can register domains that end in popular zip names and your browser will just auto correct you straight into malware land.
30 plus years of references to filename.zip across the internet are about to become links pointing to domains that are going to get registered and used as scams.
It is profoundly stupid. What else you got? What else we got going on? We got, if people have questions, they can go to the Discord and post questions in the question seeking answers channel. You can join the Discord by becoming a TechPod patron. You also get the patron episode every month and you get access to a wonderful community full of just spectacular nerds that talk about all sorts of good stuff all day long. It's a good thing. You can find out about that at patreon.com/techpod.
The good kind of nerds.
Yeah. Like, we're not talking about the crappy candy that is like nobody likes.
Wait, you don't like nerds?
No, man, nerds suck.
Wow, what?
Yeah, nerds are gross. They make your mouth hurt. And like my teeth hurt when I have a nerd.
You do feel like after a box of nerds, you do feel like some enamel has been removed.
Yeah, there's enamel gone. And also I need to talk to Wilfred Brimley about the diabetes.
I love nerds. I haven't had nerds probably since I was a kid, but I love nerds.
My daughter got a nerds rope for Easter or Valentine's Day or something one year. And like, it was like you just watched her will to live as she got further into that thing until she was just a shell of a human after that.
Yeah, but a happy shell?
No, she did not seem happy. She needed a nap. It was awful.
All right, fine.
Yeah. Speaking of naps.
Questions.
Yeah.
Let's, some questions. Yeah. Wait, what does that mean?
I don't know. I was trying to give you a segue there. Is we have a nap related question. I figured there was a nap question.
Speaking of naps, here's some answers. It'll put you to sleep.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Here's an email mysteriously signed N.
Oh, yes. Nancy.
I'm sorry.
It's from Nancy.
I don't even know when we talked about this. This might have been a couple questions.
A couple months ago, I think. Yeah.
I can confirm that certain models of the Roomba used SLAM technology to map interior rooms. The use of SLAM enabled Roomba to clean in the cornrow pattern compared to the random bumping that less guided robot vacuums do. Brad was right, in my opinion, that the reason Amazon bought iRobot was because of the mapping capability of the Roomba. In what ways do you think Amazon will try to monetize the interior mapping data they're now getting from the Roomba? Do you think the recent layoffs that hit the Alexa business are indicative of a lower than expected Internet of Things market? Hence the need to diversify by buying iRobot.
I think that the layoffs that hit the Alexa business are because they've been giving away Alexas for free for almost 10 years now, and they can't figure out a way to make money with them. Mm-hmm. I think that I don't have any idea how they can monetize SLAM maps of people's houses.
Yeah, I mean, you could see it feeding into Amazon recommendations somehow. Like if they, you know, certain amounts of floor space might correspond to increased desires for blank household goods or decorations or whatever. Or
yeah,
I bet they could even run algorithms on layout, right? And try to, I bet they could intuit like, oh, they have more bathrooms than this other family. They probably want more of this that goes in the bathroom. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the things that they'll successfully recommend to me are going to be wildly different than the things that they successfully recommend to somebody that has a 4,000 square. I have a small house. You have a small apartment. I mean, it's a big apartment, but it's still like, it's not a 4,000 square foot house.
Wait, does this count as a big apartment?
I think it's a pretty good size apartment.
Yeah. Two bedroom, one bath.
Yeah. I mean, look, one bath is always I feel like Bay Area luxury is, hey, you have two toilets.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Anyway. I think it's probably house size would be my guess. Something sure. Really granular.
Yeah.
But also they could find that out because they know your address, so they could just look you up on the property maps. So I don't know why they need Roomba for that necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe
it's right. Messy people versus clean people.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah. SLAM. Oh. SLAM is simultaneous location mapping. So we use multiple camera inputs to detect, make a 3D map of an area. By the way, robots use it to move around spaces. Yes. VR headsets use it to track their position in 3D space inside a room.
The more you know.
Yeah.
All right. Question from Cogbert. You said you had an answer for this. How long before PCs start using a 220 volt power supply?
Okay. So I think I told the story in the podcast before, but it's good. So I'm going to do it again. In like 2002 or 2003, when I was talking to Tony Tomasi at NVIDIA, he's not the chief scientist, but he's like the technical marketing guy. So you could ask him scary questions. We started talking about like what the upper limits of PC performance were. And he pointed at the plug on the wall. It was like, look, the most we can get out of a wall plug, if you have a 20 amp circuit breaker on the circuit, is 1600 watts. And there's some overhead. So realistically, it's like, you know, 1450 or something like that. So everything that they've done up until this point is how much compute can we jam out of the 1600 watts that you get out of the average 120 volt wall plug in a US house. I don't think anybody's going to put 220 volt power supplies in for normal computers at home, but yeah, it's like there is going to, that is the hard limit. And they've been thinking about it for 20 years at this point.
So wait, 120 is the hard
120
limit?
Volts because 20 okay. amps.
I mean, the electricity continues to be one of the most mystifying subjects to me.
Okay.
But if the grid is 120 or the wall outlet is 120 volt, could you even have a 220 volt power supply? I mean, if the wall can't supply that.
Oh, so 220 is basically taking two. So you can combine two circuits to basically double. So 220 is basically 220 circuits.
So you would need outlets on two different circuits. You couldn't use just two plugs on the same outlet.
No. You use, it's a different kind of plug.
I see.
So like, where you grew up and where I grew up, we used electric dryers. We didn't have gas dryers, right? And they, the electric dryers, electric stoves have a different kind of plug than the 120 volt, two vertical prongs and one round plug that, that you're accustomed to.
Is it that kind of circular plug with the diagonal?
Yeah, it's like a round prongs. One and the prongs go up inside and there's a diagonal one usually. Yeah. So those are 220 volt plugs.
I see.
So it's a completely, like if you have, you use them for electric, big electric appliances, like the dryer, the clothes dryer, the hot water heater, if you have an induction range or an electric range, if you have a car charger, an L2 car charger, that'll be a 220 volt plug, or it can just be wired directly into the wall. And a lot of places like where we live, our power box, the thing that where the electricity comes in and is distributed throughout the house, doesn't have enough spaces in it to do more than maybe one 220 volt line, because you need breakers. It takes multiple sets of breakers for each 220 volt line. So like that's where the 1600 watt limit, because 120 volts, I'm going to do the math here, make sure this actually works. 120 volts times 20 amps. 25 amps is equal to 3000 watts. Yeah.
That's a lot of watts.
So a lot of watts. It's 20 amps though. So it's 120 times 20 is like 2400 watts. Yeah. So anyway, 1600 is what he told me. Maybe it's a 15 amp breaker is what their math is. That actually works. 120 times 15 is, math is hard. I want to cut this part out because this is embarrassing. 1800 watts. So 1600 is probably the overhead they have on a 15 amp circuit, I guess then.
You know, I let's just cut to the chase here. I think we can say if we're at the point where the wiring layout of the average house needs to be changed to accommodate a plug for a computer.
Yeah.
We've screwed up.
Also, people are probably going to yell at me because I think 120 volt plugs are actually 110 volt plugs. We just call them 120 volt because of reasons.
That I think that might be right.
Anyway,
I certainly am out of my depth, but
we're not electricians. That's the big takeaway here.
Let's say, what if we continued focusing on performance per watt and getting and making that better instead of dumping more juice into things?
That seems like a good idea, Brad.
I was looking up some of the current scuttlebutt about the next Intel CPU after the next one. The first one to use their big new process, Intel, what is it, 20A, the Angstrom era.
Yeah.
Have you kept up with that? Anyway, one of the rumors is that it's supposed to be like 1.5x more efficient than current.
That sounds good.
Like it's the first, you know, since change in leadership there. And, you know, obviously it takes years to change the product roadmap or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, AMD's been pretty good with efficiency recently.
Well,
although less so with these new ones, but anyway, like it's nice to hear that Intel might be getting competitive there too.
I mean, the efficiency stuff makes a huge difference because my, like even just looking at my CPU doing normal stuff, it often, if I'm playing a game or something, will hit either the thermal limit or the power limit or both if I'm spiking multiple CPU cores. So being more efficient would mean I could go faster.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
who doesn't want to do that?
I love going fast. I like Sonic. I too want to go fast.
Yeah. Question from Jason from the Discord. Where do you both get your tech news from? Twitter, sites like The Verge or Ars? This is even beyond tech news I would broaden this to all news. Let's say this is less true recently, but until recently, for a very long time, Twitter has probably been my primary news source for everything.
So I moved from like using a really well-defined list of Google Reader feeds, like RSS feeds run through Google Reader, to when Google killed Google Reader, I switched to basically using Twitter for that stuff by following journalists whose work I liked. Like that was where I found that. I also found people who were relatively good aggregators who also were mostly journalists.
Yeah.
On all topics, politics, tech, science, whatever. The decline of Twitter and the fact that the good journalists have mostly left Twitter at this point, except for promotional purposes, means that I had a hole in my life. Yep. Tech news. I kind of skim the front pages of The Verge and Ars. I love Ars. I started out at Ars, so I have a little bit of a bias there. I'm less interested in the kind of the product access coverage that The Verge does, and more interested in the why things are the way they are that Ars does.
Yes.
Tech Meme's pretty good. I usually look at Hacker News. Like if I'm looking, if we want to do a new current news story, then I'll look at Hacker News and see what people are talking about there. But it's increasingly crazy people.
Yeah. You recommended Tech Dirt to me recently.
Oh, Tech Dirt's great. Yeah. Mike Masnick has been doing Tech Dirt for a really long time. And it's good for like digital freedom stuff, DMCA, like bad legislation. He's been really good about like why, how Twitter is fucking up on every level. They're very aware of the challenges with moderation at scale and why that stuff doesn't typically scale, and has a good understanding of how the internet works, both from a legal and a functional standpoint, which is kind of unusual. Like there's a lot of sites that are good at the legal stuff. There's a lot of sites that are good at the technical stuff, and that overlap of like the legal, the technical, the operations, all that stuff is challenging. And Tech Dirt does a good job with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I maybe to clarify a little bit, like I use Twitter to notify me about news, but anything I actually really want to know about and retain information, I usually click through and read the article.
Well, I mean, yeah. Clicking just reading the headlines on Twitter has always been a bad way to get the news.
That is a bad way to even have accurate news.
Mastodon, I get, so these days on Masto, I get like all the security people I used to follow on Twitter seem to be over there. So I find out about breaches and hacks and problems with hardware and software and stuff like that there. And then the Blue Sky has replaced a lot of my old Twitter news following, it turns out.
Man, I can't wait till that thing just opens up and they release all of the code and people can run their own instances is all of it?
I don't think all of it. I think they're still working on some of it.
I saw they open sourced the app a week or two ago.
Yeah, there's custom feeds now, so you can generate your own feeds and dump them into the, and people can subscribe to them like you follow a person now, which is cool.
Yeah, it needs to be opened wide before we can truly leave Twitter behind, but I feel like we might be on our way.
I'm pretty sure I've left Twitter behind at this point.
Well, yeah, but there's like still some stuff you can only get there.
I'm just going to set up a bot on my account that replies with a slap anytime somebody says something stupid about me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing to do. That is what you would do, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know me, just slapping people left and right. That's what I do. If you want to find me on Blue Sky, I'm willsmith.actor, by the way. Apropos of nothing.
Is there a dot actor?
Fuck yeah, there's a dot actor. I am really? Literally willsmith.actor.
Wait, oh, you're not joking? You actually changed it?
No, I paid $30. Are you kidding me? I paid $30 for willsmith.actor. Are you the fucking...
I mean, of course you would.
Yes, it's hilarious. No.
But I'm saying you changed your Blue Sky username to that.
Yeah, so the code that you put in the domain on Blue Sky, like the text entry that you put on the domain, is the same. So you can just go, once you set it up on your domains, you can go change it on a whim.
Oh, I knew like, that.
I could be will.content.town. I could be, I think I have not that willsmith.com, and I had willsmith.fun set up for a while too.
Yeah. I knew about that stuff. Like I have a very good short domain that I've been sitting on that I will use as my username on the thing eventually. But the thing here's what I really want to ask. Like, so if you get on there, and register a bsky.social name first.
Yeah.
And then you change it to another domain.
Gone, baby.
Does that release the bsky.social name? So that's why I'm not doing it yet.
I don't care about the bsky.social. Bsky.social is not going to matter because it's going to be federated, doesn't it?
I know. Yeah. I know, but I'm guessing if that thing catches on, that's still probably going to be the primary place that most people who don't care about having their own domain have a name. And just, you know, with issues around impersonation and stuff, I kind of just want to squat my name on bsky.social.
Yeah,
but I will make another account to use my vanity username.
Okay.
Is where I'm leaning.
Fair.
Anyway, question from unimaginative pseudonym.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use a flat sheet on your bed or not? Absolutely.
When you say flat sheet, where does the flat sheet go on the bed sandwich?
The fitted, as the name implies, is the one that fits around the mattress.
Yeah.
The flat, if you are one to use a flat, is the next one up.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sheet that would go right above you.
Yeah. So you go between the fitted and the flat.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a flat, then the comforter is right on you, which is for people with a difference of opinion from me, let's say.
So, oh man, this is going to be bad. You're not going to like my answer to this at all.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't like fitted sheets.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, what the fuck? I can at least understand. I've stayed in European hotels where they don't have a flat sheet, just a comforter. Like, I at least get that. I have never heard anybody who doesn't like the fitted sheet.
Well, so you can use flat sheets and you just fold them a special way. The problem with fitted sheets is they never fold well. So they're always big and poofy because of the gussets.
I guess.
So I use a flat sheet on the bottom.
What?
And then above that is me. And then above that is a duvet that is like a sheet material duvet. And then if it's cold, then there's a blanket on top of the duvet.
How does the flat sheet stay adhered to the mattress?
How does it's what are you doing?
You roll around at night and like it's going to
no,
bunch up and
it goes underneath them. It gets tucked under the mattress. You fold the corners into hospital corners and it just tucks under there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's perfectly normal. But also my duvet cover is made of the same stuff as the sheets. It's like sheet material. So I just take that off and wash that every, whenever I wash the sheets.
It's not the direction I expected this question to go.
I love. I got to say, we got a new down comforter duvet for the duvet cover before winter this last year. It was a good decision because I've been cozy and it's warm in the winter. It's cold in the summer. It's just like they said polyester was in the 70s, but that was all a lie. The down comforter, highly recommended.
Sure.
We almost sprung because we have a hot and cold problem in our house where I'm always cold and my wife's always hot.
Oh,
and we almost sprung for the hot sea cold sea duvet where like one side has more fill than the other side. But we at the last minute, we decided, A, it was a stupid amount of money, more expensive than the already too expensive down comforter. And B, like just managing that seemed like it would be a pain in the ass.
So I'll say the reasons that I like the flat sheet. Number one, it's nice to not feel like I have to wash the comforter every 2 weeks because it's not touching me directly.
Yeah.
Number two, I sleep extremely hot. So sometimes all I want is a sheet and nothing else.
So do you have like a downfill thing in there? Or is it just a comforter that's a with the down comforter, you only wash the outside part. So it's just like having an extra sheet in there.
Yeah. Well, that's what we have.
Yeah.
I'd like two of those because my partner's like you and wants
the
mountains of comforter.
We go and tell you if you want to get her something really nice, you need to get her a heated mattress pad and she will love you forever. It is fantastic.
So
for the colds.
I am the type of person that no matter how cold it is in the house.
Yeah.
If it is like you are literally shivering in here, it is that cold.
Yeah.
If I get all the way under a big like down comforter.
Yeah.
And sleep there for too long.
Oh God, it's so good.
I will wake up drenched in sweat.
I want to have just my nose and eyes poking out.
Man, no. Like if I am fully burritoed inside of a like down comforter from like neck to toe, like yeah. I will be sweaty as disgustingly sweaty three or four hours.
You a goose down, you got the duck down. What kind of down you got?
Some kind of down in there. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. We bought a bamboo blanket.
Oh wow.
A bamboo fiber blanket.
How's that?
It's awesome.
Really?
It's very thin. It's very breathable.
Okay.
By and large, I use the flat sheet and that bamboo blanket and I'm good.
Dude, what's your jam situation? Are you like, are you like flannel jammies or anything? Oh, or are you?
It's getting a little personal. Isn't
okay.
It?
Sorry. Fleeces?
Just underwear.
Okay. Okay. I like a pair of flannel pants and a t-shirt personally.
Man, you do run cold. Good God, man.
I'm cold all the time, Brian.
If I was wearing flannel pants and a t-shirt in bed, I would probably sweat just under the flat sheet.
Well, they're not like heavy flannel pants. It's not like Paul Bunyan's shirt up there. It's just like a light flannel, it's just soft. I like soft things. I'm delicate, Brad.
Yes. Yes, I get that. You marked this email from Bodysaurus/Josh top three ice cream flavors. I don't think I have an answer for this. I can't believe I am shocked to say this.
Wait, what?
I don't think I care about ice cream enough to name my three favorite flavors. I don't know what they are.
Man, see, I have the opposite problem is I've never really met an ice cream that I didn't like.
Huh? I'm struggling here, man. Like some kind of peanut butter cup, chocolate chip thing or something. Maybe. I don't know.
I like a cookies and cream.
Okay. Sure. Yes. That's good.
Yeah, cookies, strawberry. I'm going to say strawberry is a good strawberry is a top tier flavor. Bad strawberry is a garbage flavor. I like, I had the Tillamook boysenberry pie or the Tillamook pie flavor. What is it? What flavor is it?
I don't know. I didn't know Tillamook made anything but cheese.
Marionberry pie. No, Tillamook Marionberry pie ice cream is a banger. It has little bits of like graham cracker chunks in there and like a blueberry Marionberry ripple. It's very good. Vanilla is nice, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Coffee. I love a coffee ice cream.
Some kind of a nut, like a praline or a walnut or something. Praline's not a nut. What is that?
Isn't a praline like a nut wrapped in caramel or something?
I think that's right.
Butter
pecan.
Butter pecan is an old person flavor, Brad.
I like butter pecan ice cream.
When my wife worked at a Baskin Robbins, and my dad loves butter pecan, and she says that's the flavor that no one under 90 orders. Yep, so
that's
congratulations.
Let's say we had it around a lot.
Yeah.
My grandparents had it around a lot.
Yeah. My grandparents always were Klondike bar people. Mm-hmm. They always had Klondike bars and you would cut the Klondike bar diagonally in half.
Whoa.
And we would each get a half of a Klondike bar.
What would you do for a diagonally cut half of a Klondike bar?
You know why you cut it diagonally, right?
Why?
Because it's impossible to get an uneven cut if you cut diagonally. If you do it horizontally, it's wild card.
Somebody's going to walk away feeling burned.
Somebody's going to get screwed, yeah. Nana is not going to get fucked over by anybody.
Yes. That's Nana's prerogative.
Yeah.
From ice cream to soup.
Okay.
Question from Evie Nix. Is there any meal in which it is not appropriate to order soup with the meal?
Hell no.
It can either be brought before the meal or with it. I guess as long as it's like thin enough to be an appetizer soup, that's fine. Listen, there is some soup that eats like a meal.
Oh, really?
Yes. And you might not want to order one of those soups along with let's say like a leg of lamb or something heavy.
Is it favored by senators from Texas? Is that the one you're thinking of? Okay.
Wade, does he have some weird?
Did you not know the story about Ted Cruz and the Chunky's soup?
No.
When he first was sent to Washington, he got an apartment and he stocked it exclusively with cans of Chunky's soup. And that's what he was able to, because he wasn't capable of cooking for himself.
Okay.
Anyway.
Food and Wine magazine says Ted Cruz's love for soup apparently knows no bounds.
Yeah, it's not a glowing endorsement.
He once bought 100 cans of Campbell's Chunky Soup, according to his wife.
Yeah.
We've got a small stock of canned soup here. And I am desperately trying to improve my diet, let's say.
Yeah.
And I got to looking at the nutritional information on that soup. And
don't do that.
I'm going to eat through the rest of it, but I don't think I'm going to buy any more after that because holy shit.
Well, so the thing I will tell you is that the reduced sodium.
Okay. Yes.
Is if you eat the reduced sodium or reduced fat, like we get a lot of, we have chicken noodle cause you know, I have a kid that gets sick a lot.
That's fine.
The reduced sodium chicken noodle soup does not taste like it has reduced sodium in it at all. Mm-hmm. It still is insanely salty.
It's like some of the soups I've got in there have got over 60% of your daily allotment of sodium in the one can.
In one serving of the one can, cause the can is two servings.
Oh geez.
Yeah. So
wait a minute.
Yeah.
Would the FDA allow them to sell a soup that was over 100% of your daily sodium?
Yeah, they don't. It's fucking America. Capitalism rules. You can buy whatever you want. You want Oreos with Pop Rocks? They'll do that.
Oh, boy. Oreos with nerds?
No, fuck nerds, man. Nerds suck. I don't know about breakfast soup.
I could still see it.
Is like cereal? Is cereal breakfast soup? Get a bowl of cereal with your pancakes? I mean, I love
Let's
soup.
Just move on.
I love a soup. Is oatmeal soup?
If it's runny enough, maybe.
Yeah. What about cream of wheat? Cream of wheat seems like it'd be a soup.
Oh man, I miss cream of wheat.
Oh, you can. You know, I'm going to tell you. There's a magical place called Safeway that you can go get cream of wheat today.
Oh yeah, I could do that, but if you're not going to put an unhealthy amount of brown sugar in your cream of wheat and a good dollop of butter as well, what's the point?
Wait, what? Butter? Also, cream of wheat is a white sugar cereal, 100%. You don't put brown sugar in cream of wheat. What is this?
This is definitely one of those Tennessee, North Carolina divides.
God. It's a splash of milk and a little bit of white sugar.
What?
No. It'll fix what ails you.
It was a large quantity of butter and brown sugar for us.
Do you put butter in grits?
Sure.
Are you a salt in grits or a sugar in grits?
Go either way.
Grits were a salt for me usually. My dad specifically thought that grits were a salt thing. I liked grits with sugar.
That's fair. Man, maybe I should look into savory cream of wheat.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you, you have a rice cooker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cream of wheat, grits, polenta, all bangers in the rice cooker. Real easy too.
Cool. Yeah. We've been talking about whole grains a lot around here recently. Really want to. We eat a lot of brown rice and a decent amount of oatmeal, but I would like to start stepping it up with like some
barley's nice.
Barley, farro,
quinoa.
Yeah, we do quinoa once in a while.
Yeah, those all cook in the rice cooker.
Yeah, grain, whole grain,
whole it's grains. Good it's yeah, good for you, supposedly.
Okay, this question threw me for a loop.
Okay,
Andrew B, I just read Windows is getting RAR support.
I got nothing.
Did they just buy WinRAR? Doesn't that guy own the algorithm source? Too bad I don't use Usenet or FTP wares anymore. Also, will it have native support for checksums?
That's nuts. Every time somebody sends me a RAR file, I just assume they're a pirate.
Yeah, sure. That's probably a safe assumption.
That's what Johnny Depp uses, I think.
Apparently, this just got announced at Build.
Oh.
Apparently, it is only coming to Windows 11.
Perfect. Yet another reason to have Windows 11.
Somebody on the Discord pointed out the other day, they also just announced this must have also come out of Build. They less than a week after last week's episode where I asked, hey, how do you back up your user account from Windows?
Yeah.
They are rolling out a new tool on Windows 11 specifically for backing up user accounts and your system.
Thank God. Yeah, I looked into that after that episode because I assumed that there was a Windows backup tool because there has been a Windows backup tool since like Vista or XP, and the one that was the Windows 7 one, which was kind of lingering for a long time, is questionable. It's like it seems like it's still there, but it's supported.
I think it's still usable, but yes, it's old. I said this on the Discord. I deeply resent them developing features that would actually make me upgrade to Windows 11.
Well, Brad, I got bad news for you because I think that's their whole business model.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Windows 11's pretty good these days, I'm going to say.
I know. Honestly, it's just the nagging little UI things that I don't want to deal with, like the limits on the taskbar placements and the stupid right-click expansion.
I think they gave up on the taskbar placement thing.
Did they?
Maybe not. I just tried to drag it and didn't drag.
Anyway, I did look up this RAR support stuff. Apparently, they are using an open source library called libarchive.
Oh, okay.
But I clicked through to the libarchive page and it looks like it has read-only support for RAR. I don't believe. So like I use 7-zip on Windows.
Oh, and so actually, it's open. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you use 7-zip?
I use 7-zip.
I actually use 7-zip command line on Linux too. And it cannot write RARs either. It can only decompress them.
It's an IP thing, right?
It is
patented.
Yeah. He's right that yes, the creator of RAR does own that algorithm.
Tim RAR?
Yes. Tim RAR. Tim RAR wants you to pay him for a RAR license in order to write RARs, but also who's writing? Well, you know what? I'd start to say who's writing RARs these days, but I bet a lot of people. Now that Usenet is back.
I am sure that people are writing RARs. For some people, RARs never went away.
Are there still PAR files?
More like YAR, am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, good. I
broke Brad. I'm sorry. Yes.
Probably a good thing to have in here to be able to decompress RAR without having to install anything else in Windows. But I'd like 7-zip is one of the first things I install in Windows anyway.
It's like one password and Dropbox and then 7-zip basically for me.
It was the first third party thing I installed on this new computer. So it's cool that this is in there, but it's not really going to change the game for me.
I can't believe we didn't talk about 7-zip last week. Also, I feel like
so everybody should have it.
Yeah.
So 7-zip. I compress the archives. The project files of this podcast after I've been editing them every week. I compress them in 7-zip because the compression is quite good.
Pretty good.
What is it? Is it LZMA? I think is the.
I don't even know. I don't have to know. That's the beautiful thing about it. I just right click and like, yo, make this small.
I like knowing things like that.
From now on, when we say WinRAR, we have to say it like WinRAR. Mm-hmm. Also, it's a new policy.
Yes, it is. LZMA is the compression routine that 7-zip uses anyway. That's cool to see him doing cool stuff with Windows.
it's a, like, I gotta imagine that that's one that, like, the people who were who make the decisions about what gets shipped in Windows were, like, on vacation or something, and somebody was like, hey man, what if we ship WinRAR this on Windows 11? That'd be weird, right? And it's like, isn't that the thing that everybody uses to pirate shit? And you're like, yeah.
Panos is on sabbatical right now. Let's just slip it in there. Yeah.
And then meanwhile, the home office, somebody's like, yeah, well, okay, so how many no's on this one? Yeah. And everybody's like, yar. And they ship it.
Yep. That's what they say.
Yep. Yar.
Question from Xander. As journalists or former journalists or whatever, who have been deeply involved in the gaming community.
I'm going to bring my business card, former journalist / whatever.
It's kind of where I'm at these days. Yeah. how do we feel about big brands like Logitech slowly absorbing small, high quality brands like Astro and then gutting the company and only keeping the brand name? So I was trying to think about, like, I didn't actually realize Logitech had bought Astro, or I probably knew that and forgot it at some point. I was trying to think of other examples. There's Corsair bought Elgato.
Yep.
Can you think of some others?
It happens. Like, Logitech has a long, Logitech bought Harmony. Logitech bought Slim Devices.
Yes. Harmony is a good one. Did somebody buy SteelSeries?
SteelSeries is still SteelSeries, I believe.
Okay.
Corsair bought Origin, the PC manufacturer. Okay.
Has Razer bought up anybody?
Razer? I don't feel like Razer doesn't buy people.
Really? They seem like one that would consume.
I think that they mostly develop their stuff in-house. I don't think they spend money on external purchases. Okay. But I could be wrong. But yeah, so this is a weird question, right? Because I feel like usually when a small company, so Astro was a relatively small headset manufacturer. They had, I think at the time that they were bought, like two or three products, a kind of high-end PC gaming centric headset, and then a handful of other things. I have one post Logitech. I had a pre Logitech Astro headset and a post Logitech Astro headset. Same headset. Just the pre one eventually conked out because the build quality was kind of bad. It was the one of the launch ones, and it didn't last particularly well. The connections got giant janky.
Do you know when that was? I'm looking for
2010 or 11. It was when we were tested. Oh, really? Before we were sold. Astro started in 2009 or 2010. Yeah.
They're older than I thought then. I think that probably means I've used quite a few Astro products. I think literally all of them were post Logitech then.
Oh, no. The purchase was in 2015 or something.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Astro, I'd have to look it up, but Astro is a company I feel like was a tested thing and not a Maximum PC thing. Maybe it was a little bit, maybe it was right at the end of my time at Maximum PC, which would have been 2009, 2010. But they were design house. They also did the, they spun off of the design house that did the Xbox 360 industrial design.
That's the same company.
It's the Astro headsets spun off from there. Oh, yeah.
That's crazy. When we did that episode and you said like some design house called Astro did part of the 360 design, I was like, oh, that's weird. You mean like the headphone people? I didn't know you meant literally like the headphone people.
Yeah, literally the headphone people. So the thing that happened with Astro for me is that my needs outpaced what they were building. And I think this is the thing that happens a lot when a small company that's doing like good stuff in a niche gets bought, is you expect them as a person who's buying stuff to keep building things in niches that hopefully appeal to you. And often the company buys them because they want the niche that they're in, and then they're not going to expand into any new niches. The thing that I found is that the post Logitech Astro headset had a much better build quality, but other than that, it was more or less identical. And then the next time I needed a new pair of headphones, I wanted something that was broadcast quality with a real microphone and not a like ultimately the problem with most of like the gaming headset market is that the microphones suck.
Yes. So
TLDR is like, if you want to talk about Logitech killing somebody, they fucked up Harmony real bad, but also Harmony was doomed because HDMI CEC was getting good to the point that you didn't need a universal remote with a bunch of IR blasters and stuff anymore. Yeah. And like that happens a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly is possible for a large company to gut and ruin a small company, but
yeah,
it's not guaranteed necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are definitely examples of it happening, but I feel like Microsoft is really good at buying interesting companies and then destroying them. right? To the point that like it was a joke in the games industry that they were going to buy up your studio, your game studio, and shut it down 3 years later. And now my understanding is they're pretty hands off with game studios that they purchase because they don't want it. They don't want that to happen anymore.
Yes.
So anyway,
You said you just have the same story you've told like three times here, but I'm going to read this anyway.
Okay.
Lunchbox 700. Cause I think I have a new one.
Oh,
what is the dumbest or most painful thing you've done dealing with any tech? For example, in high school, I took recording engineering and needed to change a fuse in a board. And I asked another kid if it was unplugged and he said, yes, it was not. And I got shocked into the wall. Details are a little fuzzy, as you can imagine.
Oh, no. Oh man, you're lucky you survived that. Holy crap.
Probably a lot of juice running through a recording board.
The analog gear is scary.
Yeah.
What'd you do, Brad?
I once loading in or out a computer monitor from the college dorm, which was a relatively nice 17-inch Trinitron.
Oh, no.
Loaded into the back seats and somehow ground the screen up against the hinge where the front seat tilts on.
Yep.
Put a nice fat, like three inch or more gouge right into the kind of lower right quadrant of the screen. And it was not that old a monitor. So I basically just had to use this monitor with a very large deep gouge in the glass for the next several years.
I bought a 36 inch Panasonic CRT TV in 1998 as a floor model at Best Buy when they were clearing out the old floor models, and it didn't come with a box, and because it was not a portable TV, it didn't have handles, and I thought I could do it with two people and we needed three for sure because I lived upstairs in an apartment. And we got about halfway up the stairs and one of us started losing our grip. And we're like, we got to set this down right now. And we set it down the way we were holding it because it's so front heavy was to put it down on the glass. And I got it was about an inch scratch right on the front.
Okay. That sucks.
It wasn't that bad, but like I was pretty disappointed.
Well, yeah, it's a brand new TV. That sucks, but I thought that was going to go way worse.
Oh, no. Yeah, we didn't destroy the TV.
I thought you were going to say that it shattered somehow.
No, that thing was the glass on the front of that thing was so heavy. It was scary cuz like it was on a TV stand and its center of gravity was way too far forward for the amount of weight it was. If it had fallen on you, it would have killed you.
Yeah. CRT glass pretty thick, right? In general?
Real thick, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I should be proud of this or not. Probably not. But my dad and I once gave a Viking funeral to a little 13 inch TV that had given up the ghost with a 12 gauge.
Jesus.
Look, you live out in the country. There's a lot of space.
I know.
Look, we fired into the side of a hill.
Yeah, 12 gauge, you're not going to do it. Fine. It's fine. But
I remember even that little dinky little Emerson 13 inch, like it was harder to shatter that screen than you would have thought.
The bigger my understanding is that the bigger the tube, the thicker the glass on the front has to be too. So like when you get to those big 30 plus inch TVs, that thing weighed 220 pounds or something insane. It was so heavy.
That's rough.
And there was literally nothing to hold on to it with. Like it was like the only thing you could hold on to was the lip around the glass on the front.
God, yeah, you're reminding me of moving TVs back then. Now that was the Sony Vegas, like toward the end, they finally started putting little handholds into the side.
Yeah, you had to. But also that TV would do the anamorphic squeeze. So yes, yeah, you got full 480 Ps.
I mean, it was worth any amount of discomfort for the anamorphic squeeze.
Yeah, I love an anamorphic squeeze.
Let's see here. Here's a cake batter question. Now you might think this sounds like your average happy-go-lucky whimsical cake batter question, but I think it's fairly serious. When do you think phones will switch to NVMe storage?
Well, hold on. That could mean two different things, right?
Yes.
Because like it could mean, are you going to be able to put like a 2230 NVMe in your phone? And the answer to that is never.
I don't think I assume that's not what he means.
I assume that NVMe storage means the interface between the phone and on the chip soldered on the board is NVMe. It might already be. I don't even know.
That's what I assume he's talking about here is the interconnect, the data protocol, the whatever, like not off the shelf replaceable NVMe, but using that standard for the storage in the phone.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're seeing it now, like, you know, there are two tiers of Steam Deck now, right? Where the cheap Steam Deck uses, what is it, eMMC? Is that right?
Yeah, EMMC is the is just a it's like a app. It's basically an MMC SD card slice slot. Right.
And doesn't the expensive Steam Deck use NVMe?
The expensive Steam Decks use 2230 NVMe slots. I think the EMC one has a slot as well for the 2230, but I'm not 100% on that. I feel like they went back and forth on whether it was going to have a slot for people to open up and put a drive in.
This is probably, I'm probably simplifying quite a bit, but if we're judging purely by what is proliferating on the PC side in terms of availability and also pricing, like NVMe is taking over everything. Like NVMe drives are cheaper than SATA in the same form factor at this point.
So
like prices have fallen on NVMe storage on PC so much that I wonder if like, is the entire world just moving in this direction where like 5 or 10 years from now, like every new device is just going to use NVMe in some form.
So according to this Inantec article that I'm looking at, that the iPhone 6S has an NVMe.
Oh,
uses NVMe storage.
Wait, the 6S? Dude, that's like
6S. That's like a 10-year-old phone.
Pushing 10 years ago. Yeah. 2016, right?
2016 exactly is the year.
Was it 2016? Yeah.
So, So now, 10 years ago is the answer.
Yeah, I guess so.
But they're not going to have, the space constraints inside the phone are such that there will never be removable connectors in consumer grade phones because they add so much volume that the phone manufacturers would rather use for battery.
Totally. Well, you know, I could see like what the Fairphone or the
Framework or something like that.
The Pinephone. Like, yeah. Somebody might try it at some point, but I think he's probably asking more about the speed benefits here. But then that's also gated by the quality of the NAND you're using, right?
Yeah. So Android phones use UFS for the storage controller, which is a similar thing, but not NVMe.
Okay. All right. So the storage in your phone probably pretty fast already.
Yeah.
We can say.
Pretty fast.
Okay.
Probably fast enough, I'm going to say.
Yes. I know what the next question is. Let me find it.
Ooh, I love finding questions.
Benevolent Brute.
Yes.
The recent loss of Waypoint has me thinking, is there really a place or need anymore for corporate-backed content subscriptions like Giant Bomb Tested and Waypoint? The corporate backing may provide some benefits, but it seems like the corporate need for growth always ends up harming the platforms and employees in the long run. Is Patreon inevitably where this type of content is headed? Y'all are obviously much more intimately familiar with this than I am, so I'm interested in hearing whatever insights you'd be comfortable sharing. Shout out to Waypoint. Their unique voice will be missed. Fuck capitalism. Go home.
So it's a complicated question. This is probably more of a you question than a me question, I think. But as a person who pays for a handful of Patreons, I'm happy and also makes a fair amount of money on Patreon. I would much rather give my subscription money to the people who are doing the work than the company that pays the people that are doing the work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just in case it's not clear or if anyone doesn't understand this, when you pay a subscription to something like Giant Bomb that's owned by a big company, the company takes all the money. It's not like even some of it gets shunted directly to the property. The parent company takes the money and then decides how much to give back to the property.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. And part of that is like, hey, we probably needed better deals when we were starting out or whatever.
Well, yeah.
When we were at Whiskey Media, it was a little different situation because it was a startup and everybody was, had a little bit of equity.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, I should say if there's some kind of talent contract in place, which there was not.
Yeah.
You might get a bonus or something based on subscription revenue or something, but it's not like they are not offering that to your average employee of a corporate site that has this kind of business model. It's just like the money that property makes, even through subscriptions, is just rolled up as a line item into the P&L, the profit and loss of the division.
Yeah. I feel like Waypoint had a weird deal with their like Twitch subs and Patreon and stuff like that. Cause
I can't speak for them in any unique arrangement they might've had.
But, yeah.
But at least potentially, or the traditional way it would work is that parent company just absorbs all of that revenue and then doles it back out via budget.
Yeah.
For the next year.
I mean, and the nice thing about that is you get health insurance and you get a reliable paycheck.
Yeah.
But the bad thing is if you're making $3 million, if you have five people and they're making, you know, $3 million a year on subs, then they're not getting 3 million divided by five,
right?
3 million minus overhead divided by five, right?
Right.
They're getting salaries,
right? Like if the property is making X and then is only getting back like 0.4x in budget for the next year, that's not great.
The thing that's hard for me about this is that like this rewards people who specialize really hard. So like if you are like a really into F1, if you're really into racing games and you have a site about racing games, then, and you're the number one guy in racing games, it's much easier for you to establish that than to build a business around being like a general service gaming site or something like that.
Yeah. I think that's true. I've kind of heard talking to people recently. That's pretty true of Substack as well, which is where a lot of these, you know, the crowd funded, audience funded, writing and reporting is going on. But like you need a beat there. You can't just be a news person. Like you need a pretty specified beat to cover, to kind of stand out.
Yeah. And it's hard for me. Cause like I want general stuff. Like I liked Giant Bomb before I worked with you guys, because like I liked having a place where I found where like you talked about all the games and you talked about the news and it was the general, like I got an overview rather than a deep dive into a specific category. I don't want to pay for 25 sites. I can't listen to 25 podcasts. So like I worry that the general stuff is going to stop existing as much. But it seems like it's fine so far. So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm always a fan of the people rather than the brands.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing that strikes me about that model though, is that I don't want to say it's easy, but it's easier or it's less of a risky bet if you come out of corporate media and you already have an established audience.
That is absolutely true.
It is certainly still a risk, but is certainly, you can be a little more confident that like you at least know that you have an audience. And if you go do this independent thing, they might follow you. It's going to be much harder if you don't already have that springboard. You know, if a lot of new, never before heard of outfits are trying to launch similar things, the risk is exponentially higher that you will or won't hit. And, you know, I mean, nobody actually fully understands the alchemy of who gets big on Twitch or who gets big in media generally, right? There's a huge element of like right place, right time.
Yeah, it's the grind and get lucky is the strategy.
So yeah, like obviously it is great that these platforms exist to directly support the people that you follow, but I think there is going to be a discoverability issue maybe as that space gets more crowded and more people are coming up who didn't have that benefit of having exposure through a different platform previously.
Yeah, it's kind of like all the AI art and writing stuff where, hey, this is great that they're cutting out a lot of low end entry level art and writing jobs. But also, if you don't have people doing low end entry level art and writing jobs, there's not going to be high end. There's not going to be people to do the higher skill jobs later on.
Yeah,
it's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, though, I mean, to be fair, like people joining established media outlets and building their own brand and gaining an audience, making a name for themselves and then cutting loose and doing their own thing is like a tale as old as time. Right.
Yeah, that's true.
So like that's not going away, I guess. Like isn't that kind of the Bill Simmons thing? Right. Like he got big at ESPN and then he got out of there and.
Yeah, sure.
Started.
I totally know who Bill Simmons is.
Yeah, the sports guy. Is Grantland what he started after he got out of there, or was that the thing he did at ESPN?
I don't know.
I probably could have picked an example that I understood better.
I'm just glad you didn't pick Nate Silver, because then I'd be like, oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. All right. Shall we do our last question here?
Last question this month.
Unprecedented move. I'm going back to the emails.
Oh, wow.
Adam from England. Yes. Adam from England, it feels like over the past couple of years, the whole VPNs get you around region locks has moved from an unofficial benefit to something that they actively promote. Mm. How do you think streaming companies like Netflix, or more importantly, the rights holders, feel about this? It feels to me like all it will take is a rights holder complaining to a government before either streaming companies are forced to come up with better region locking or VPNs have to block access to streaming sites.
I think that the kind of companies that run that sell VPNs to people maybe don't give much of a shit what the governments care about.
Yeah.
I also will say that when I wanted to watch Eurovision a couple of weeks ago, I was like, oh man, I could just do this. I could set up a VPN and then, or I could keep hitting tours until I get one in the right region to watch this. Or I could just give Peacock $4 and not have to worry about it and be watching in like 30 seconds. I gave Peacock $4. Then I immediately canceled my subscription.
You sell out.
I know. I feel bad.
But fucking also, corporate shill.
Look, man, there's only so it's exhausting.
Okay? I get it.
Sometimes
no,
you just
trust me.
Sometimes you just want to sit on the couch and watch some weird music stuff and pay $4.
That's fair.
It turns out.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I actually don't have a great answer for this. I'm not sure I understand quite all the legal ramifications of this situation enough to answer it.
This is not legal stuff. This is legal for them, but not for you. Like it's not on you to fulfill the terms of their content agreements.
No, totally. I just mean legal stuff between streaming services and VPNs and governments that might force some change here. I will say if all else fails, there's always the option of running your own VPN.
But that doesn't help you. What you need is that you need VPN buddies. No, I'm not going to say this out loud, but if you know people in other countries that have, you know, the content you crave, you can be a VPN buddy with them and connect to their VPN and they connect to your VPN. And,
to be clear, I'm not talking about running a VPN like on your router, for example, and VPNing into your house. I'm talking about like renting a VPS in another country and setting up your own VPN on that.
Yeah.
Which is like absolutely can do. I mean, it's probably some command line work still, but I've seen guides out there for like, here's how to just get a VPS for $4 a month and run your own VPN on it. Just do all this and you're good. And I think those guides are going to get easier and easier. There may very well be open source packages at this point that make it easy to set up your own VPN.
I mean, yeah, you could pay $5 a month for a Linode, pick a region that you want it to be in and run WireGuard on it and you're done.
Yes.
It's a tilting at windmills situation. The thing is, the people who give a shit about that are always going to be able to figure out how to do it really easily. And the people who don't will pay $5, and the 99% of normal people who don't know what a VPN is will continue just not watching shit that's not available in their region.
Okay. I'm going to say this. I can't speak to the quality of these guides, but I just Googled VPS, run your own VPN.
Yeah.
The first thing that came up were guides on both howtogeek.com and makeuseof.com.
Yeah. VPS is virtual private server, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're running a virtualized server instance, basically.
The point is if sites that mainstream in terms of tech help are running guides on how to do this, I'm going to say this is going to become pretty accessible over time.
Yeah. The other thing is we live in the United States where we mostly get the content we crave.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a much more common thing if you live someplace that has had like the number of requests we got for VPN stories from Canadians and people in the UK at Maximum PC in like 2008 was very high.
Sure.
As Netflix was starting to come online and it wasn't. And like, Canadian Netflix had, remember, this is why Netflix has original content, right? Is because they couldn't get distribution rights that were worldwide for anything that they were buying. So they just started making their own original shit so they could put it everywhere.
Right.
And as a result, people in Canada and the UK and Australia and wherever else wanted to know how to do VPN stuff so they could watch US Netflix, which used to be better. Mm-hmm. And now Netflix is just kind of meh all over. So nice job, Netflix.
We finally dropped it after like years of me saying I was going to cancel Netflix. I finally did it.
Wow, really? But where are you going to watch such hip Netflix shows as Blown Away or, I mean, I actually really like Blown Away, but
don't even know what that is.
I don't
need to know.
Brad, it's Project Runway, but they do glass blowing. It's the highest drama reality show you've ever seen because people who blow glass, they're just used to heartbreaking failure at the last possible second because it's inherent to the art. It's very good. It's worth watching. Don't sign up for Netflix again.
I won't.
I think it's on HBO now anyway. All right. Sorry. Max.
Yes,
I can't believe we got through this whole episode without talking about how fucked up the Max thing was.
Let's just not.
Talk about making your own mistakes. And anyway, Brad, I think we've come to the end of the episode. My watch is telling me it's time to stand.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. We should probably obey your watch. Thank you to everybody who wrote in.
Yes, thank you, everyone. If you would like to send a question, you can send it to techpod@content.town, or you can post in the Question Seeking Answers, Q's Seeking A's channel in the Discord if you're a patron. If you'd like to find out how to be a patron, you go to patreon.com/techpod. Again, patreon.com/techpod. And for $5 a month, you can join the 4,200 people. Holy cow, there's a lot more people this month. 4,200 people who have signed up, including most recently, hold on. Most recently, Ryan Weaver. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
We also, it's the end of the month, so we thank a lot more people than we normally do, including our associate producer and executive producer to your patrons. My watch is making so much freaking noise. Holy cow. Hold on.
Man, really wants you to stand up.
Be quiet, watch. No, somebody's, people are texting like crazy.
Maybe your watch knows something you don't.
We have, friends are coming over in a moment, so I've got to.
Oh, yes.
There's communications as a result. I don't see, hold on. My Patreon window is jacked up. There we go.
Do I have to fill?
No, I'm good. I got it. We're cool now. So as always, thank you to our this isn't helping
our executive bowl tier patrons.
There we go. No. Wow. I feel really attacked. Thank you, as always, to our executive producer tier patrons, including Octothorpe Bunny Crimes, Andrew Slosky, Brad's Midsize Hoodoo Voodoo, Paddle Creek Games, makers of Fractured Veil, David Allen, James Kamek, Joel Krauska, Just Wedge, Nick Johnston, and Twinkie Says Mike B is the GIF Lord. Also, since it's the end of the month, we want to thank our associate producer tier patrons, including Andre M. Burke, Arthur Geese, Ben Tallman, Dave Yulian, Eric Klein, Graham Banks, Chad Rita, Jason Rooney, the ref, Jay Maybe, Matt Walker, parentheses, Walkman 8080, close parentheses, Nathan Phelps, Sanchit Kumar, Steve Lynn, Thomas Shea, and Tom Hilton. Thank you all so much. We appreciate everybody. And I just love, it's so nice. Open up the Discord in the morning. I'm just a lurker now, mostly, Brad. I just get in. I'm like, man, people talk about cool stuff. I don't know if I have anything cool to talk about right now, but
maybe I should follow your lead. Sometimes I worry that I am in there a little too much with my weird stuff.
No, I like your weird stuff. I enjoy lurking on your weird stuff too. So it's good. It's a good place to lurk. I learn stuff every day, which is always nice. I wish, honestly, I had a thing that I could just pull all the links that people share in the Discord general chat and dump them into like a Google Reader style interface, because I think I could probably get pretty good news out of that. Anyway, yeah,
I bet so. I am on the hunt right now. It's my most recent weird thing from the Discord. I'm on the hunt for a very specific, available only in Europe, artisan, finely crafted USB bracket.
What kind of USB bracket?
It's just the kind that you run to your motherboard headers.
Why do you need it?
Because every you know what I'm talking about? The little PCIe slot USB USB ports that run to the headers.
And you put it in the slot, empty slot in your case?
Every one of those that I own, like half my USB devices don't work with them, which I assume has to do with like voltage drop. In some cases, like the same device will work on one of the ports, but not the other one. I think they are just very low quality.
Oh, that's weird.
And I've found one made by D-Lock. It's got a straight up data sheet. I didn't need to bring this into this podcast.
Wow.
Anyway, wow. I suspect that one might actually perform to spec based on looking at the item and the fact that they even publish a data sheet with it in the first place, not available for sale in the United States. So okay. I'm on the hunt. Look, for functional USB bracket.
You need a VPN and a drop shipper. What you do is you set up your VPN, you log in from Europe, and they'll be like, hey, man, I'm European. Just here's my electro card. I'm cool, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have it sent to the drop shipper, and he's never even going to know that he's not sending it to the to Europe. He's going to be like, what? I'm sending this to a European person, right? In Italy, it's Brad Shoemaker Eno in Rome, Italy.
Wait, are there really like just third-party dropship options now?
Yeah.
Really?
You get all sorts of crazy shit sent with dropshippers.
Like, I was actually close to emailing a retailer in the Netherlands who has this item to see if they ship to the United States this morning, but are you saying I can just not even worry about that?
It's kind of expensive, but yes, you can do that.
How much are we talking?
I don't know, man. I don't do nefarious shit. I just keep it on the up and up over here.
I don't know that I can spend $200 for this USB bracket.
That's a stupid amount of money. You could make a USB bracket.
There's also every possibility that this one will also have issues with my audio devices.
Yeah, I'm going to suggest, here's a novel concept. Have you thought about a hub?
Yeah, that option had come up.
I would describe that as the normal solution for this problem.
Also not a perfect solution, though. I mean, like, hubs have their own issues. But I mean, but power, generally, you get a good powered one. The power is not one of them.
So I plug.
Wait, hold on. I didn't mean to turn this into my tech support, but do you run your Motu through a hub?
So what I was going to tell you is that I have everything except, okay, my keyboard and mouse run into a USB switcher.
Oh, that stuff's fine. I'm letting the keyboard.
I'm giving you the map.
Okay.
Everything else USB plugs into a hub, and then the Motu and my webcam plug directly into ports on the motherboard.
Interesting. Okay.
So I have four plugs total.
I see.
And actually, I think that the USB switcher is probably plugged into the hub, if I had to guess.
So the thing I've come to find is that 80% of the USB ports on the back of this board, useless for camera and audio.
That's not great. I would say that is the kind of thing I would take up with my motherboard manufacturer, because that does not seem appropriate.
Yes, it's a problem.
Are they all wired into some shitty Ace Tech controller or something?
Yes, they're all going
through. Why would they put the fucking ports on the back of the board into the Ace Tech controller?
So Jesus. That's the thing. There are 8 ports that run through the chipset on this board, which I have tested enough to tell you audio video works fine with those. They are only exposed through the motherboard headers.
That is so fucking stupid.
The shitty ports are running through the third-party controllers on the board on the rear I/O. The good chipset ports, I need header brackets to access.
And the header brackets are unreliable because they're probably USB. Are you getting USB 3 header brackets or USB 2 header brackets?
I'm trying to get 3. So there are 4 ports on the rear I/O that are good.
Yeah.
But they are the only 4... The red ports, that's the easiest way to describe it. They're, you know, USB 3.2 Gen 2, but they're the red ones. So burning 3 of the 4 good USB ports on the back with like USB 2.0 devices really fucking sucks. That's why I'm trying to get these brackets.
Yeah. Well, the Motu is a USB 3 device.
Oh, it's a 2. I look up the spec.
It has a C connector on the uphill end.
Yeah, the USB-C can be 2.0.
Oh, God. Okay. I hate USB, man. Okay. Good luck, Brad. See you next week. I had to solder a piece on a motherboard one time. It was a disaster.
That sounds terrible.
I was literally sitting at my desk and I heard a tink, tink, tink. And then a fan made a real bad noise. And when I dug the thing that had fallen into the fan, we shouldn't put this in pot. Well, we could, but
I might put this after the end of the show.
Yeah. So when I dug the piece that had fallen into the power supply fan out of the power supply fan, I looked at it. I was like, this looks like a little, it's like a little SMD resistor that solders on flat on the motherboard. This is on an Intel reference board for like a, I don't know, probably the first hexa-core systems, like a Haswell maybe. No, before Haswell would have been, I can't remember.
Ivy Bridge?
No, way before Ivy Bridge. Years before Ivy Bridge. Nehalem, probably. Yeah, Nehalem. So anyway... Also, the moment that happened, my network connection dropped.
Nice.
So I looked at it. I looked at how to solder the SMT motherboard pieces, the components back on. And this was before I'd done it at Whiskey, I think, even. And I was like, man, I don't think I can do that. So I tried it. It was a disaster. Network port never worked again. Luckily, that motherboard had 2 network ports. So I just put a piece of tape over the one that wasn't working and never thought about it again. Problem solved.
That's problem solving. How does something just fall off your motherboard with no intervention?
I can only assume that it was a bad solder and it had just like, it was the, where that component was, it was near enough the CPU and the voltage regulators that part of the board was probably warm.
Okay.
And would get warm and cool and warm and cool and warm and cool and warm and cool and warm and cool. And next thing you know, you got an Xbox 360 red ringing.
The Xbox 360 classic.
Yeah.